Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox. We will find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome, friends, scholars, gentlemen, maybe a couple ladies, one or two. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
My name is Rich.
And you guys may have noticed that this week Alon is absent.
He's missing.
Notably absent. I'm sure everyone's wondering.
Alon is missing.
Where's Alon? Alon, of course, those of you who might be in the know, is at GDC.
What's that?
GDC is that morass convention of industry hotshots and posers. The problem being you can't really tell the hotshots from the posers most of the time. But
Who's a poser?
Most of them are posers.
Names. I want names.
I'm sure that...
Who's a hotshot? Will Wright?
Yeah, we'll get to that later. I don't know if Will Wright's a hotshot.
Will Wright is totally a hotshot. How can you not know?
He's a marquee name. He's a marquee name.
Yeah,
anyway,
he's a genius.
GDC, Game Developers Conference, that's where Alon is. So I've taken over the show, which, you know, Alon really should know better, but he doesn't. So I use that to my advantage. And so we're just going to talk about what we usually talk about. This episode, I'm going to take more of like a game design kind of tack with everything because what's wrong, Rich?
Sorry, I'm just reading some news on Dig, flipping through, and the title of this story is Ex-Blizzard Employee Divorces Husband Over WoW. I'm going to read into this a little further, but that's just really, really funny.
Yeah, that's the funny part is when she gave him WoW and expected him not to divorce her because of it.
Is that what happened?
Basically.
Sweet. That's just really funny.
So, yes, that's fantastic. All right, so we're already totally discombobulated, but that's awesome because that's how we roll down here.
That's how it's going to be this week.
That's right.
Today.
And hopefully Alon will call in. I know that he's probably busy drunk and partying and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But hopefully he'll call in and we'll have some more excitement there. Rich, you told me you've been playing a hot new game.
Dude, Professor Layton and the Curious Village.
Okay, you know, that's like Snoozeville right now. I'm just like, dude, what are we talking about?
On the DS. I've got it. You can play it after the show or something.
Yeah.
It's sweet, basically, is what it comes down to. It's like a whole bunch of puzzles in a game, except it's not just a bunch of puzzles. They have some sort of storyline to it.
So, which, like, it's like Seventh Guest? What?
I don't know what Seventh Guest is.
Oh, yeah, that was probably made before you were born.
Yeah,
right?
Probably. I've never heard of it. But no, it's got like a whole bunch of puzzles, you know, like the... You know, this is the picture with these matches, and you have to move it to make a different thing, or, I don't know, I can't think of any more good examples off the top of my head, but it's a really fun game that it just makes you kind of think, because they're really hard puzzles, a lot of them, you know, I'm sitting there for 10 minutes trying to figure out, and I'm like, oh, I got it, and then I'm really happy, so, but it's just, it's like one of those games that there aren't difficulty levels, it's just, this is the puzzle, and you have to figure it out, and if you can't, then you lose.
It's not one of those retarded, I'm exploring the room and trying to, you know, find the 12 things I can click on so I can get the key to get to the other room.
No, there's a couple things clicking on and finding hidden puzzles, but it has nothing to do with, you know, the outcome of the game. So.
All right, so that you give it your stamp of approval?
Yeah, I've played it for like 12 hours now, and I beat it, and it's awesome.
It's interesting that you say that you played it for 12 hours, because one thing I wanted to talk about today, and we're going to get to it next segment. I'm going to incense everybody first by saying that I'm going to tell you all you guys why game reviews are always wrong.
Okay, so I'm wrong, or I didn't really review it. I just kind of said stuff about it.
Okay, just still wrong.
I'm wrong.
Still wrong. So we're going to find out why next segment.
Uh huh.
If you like to call in, we're here. You can call us 866-536-1100. Apparently, the webpage is down for some reason. I don't know.
I don't know what to do with that.
You know, terrorists,
it worked a half an hour ago.
Terrorists are always trying to bring us down, but somehow we always fight back. So, whoa.chatterboxers.com if it's available. If not, I guess you're SOL. So, yeah, actually, one thing that I thought was really interesting was I saw on on one of those websites, they all look the same, one of those news blog websites, that there's this game called, I think it's called Fez.
Fez?
No, 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 not Rez.
Okay.
Fez.
I have not heard of Fez.
It's like, it was really interesting. I was looking at it before coming onto the show, and I was like, wow, we're starting to see a new genre here, which I don't know if this is necessarily good, but basically this game took what they did in Paper Mario, but they took it to perhaps where Paper Mario thought they were going to take it, but decided not to. And by that, I mean, you know, you've got the really interesting 2D, 3D gameplay thing going on in Paper Mario, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this game is the same principle, except when you change, you know, press the button to change the camera perspective, it shifts to, you know, it rotates around 90 degrees, right? And you're always playing in 2D. You don't go to 2D to 3D. You're switching between, like, the front view of the level to the back view of the level to the right view of the level to the left view of the level.
Oh, I've seen this game. Yeah. I just didn't recognize the name.
And at first I was like, oh, wow, that's really interesting. You know, I saw this before, right?
Yeah.
So, like, that game, Paper Mario, there's, like, Echo Chrome, which...
Oh, yeah.
You know my opinion about that.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
It's crap.
It's crap? Okay. Because they released a new video today that I haven't watched yet.
Right.
But
I just decided it was crap without looking at
the
new
that's
stuff.
Really cool. I'm sorry. I'm watching the video of Fez now.
Okay. Yeah. So, see, even Rich is excited, which I know isn't saying much. But anyway.
But no, it's really cool.
It's really cool. But then if you keep watching it, you'll notice that, like, what's the player doing, right? There's this one sequence, and I think this illustrates the problem with these types of games immediately, is that there's this one sequence where basically standing on a platform in the middle of nowhere, right?
Uh-huh.
And you see him jump up, right? In the height of his jump, he presses the button to switch to camera view. And then all of a sudden, right, unexpectedly, oh, look, I've rotated, you know, this other platform, you know, right under me, right? Or, like, right next to me, right?
Yeah.
And, like, it sounds cool and surprising, and it's really novel and stuff like that, but... The thing is, I mean, if you're playing the game, you would never know to do that unless you did a really retarded amount of exploration in the game.
Well, you might not know that right away. I mean, if the game's done correctly, where you figure it out over time.
If it is, sure.
Yeah, if it's got good design.
It's an issue of design, and it's an issue of implementation.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that makes these types of games really hard to design, and I think it's probably why the people who made Super Paper Mario didn't go that route,
mm-hmm.
is because they took, you know, if it's really hard for a player to visualize certain things, certain kind of, like, transformations, right? So, like, this type of game takes, you know, something that's in 2D, but it's not really in 2D. You're only looking at, you know, a 2D projection of things that are really in three dimensions.
Yeah.
Okay? This is naturally really hard to visualize. It just is. You know, even people that work in 3D applications all the time, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's not as straight up as, like, you know, something where you could just, like, see everything in the game on your screen, right? I mean, that's an extreme example, but basically the problem I think that comes with these sort of things is that you're always, and this is the problem I think with Echo Chrome, is that you're always kind of, like, because you can't intuitively grasp what the projection of the thing is going to be, you're always kind of searching around with the controls, just fuddling around randomly, and, like, oh, magically I'll come upon, like, a certain perspective that will give me, you know, the answer that I need to this puzzle or the solution or the way out or whatever, right? And I think that these kinds of games will only really work if they can present everything in a way to the player that's intuitive enough so that the player actually has some sense of, like, what they're doing before they get there, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I mean, if I jump up and I just, like, oh, I don't see anything, I'm just going to jump up and press left and right.
And rotate stuff around.
And rotate it. Oh, look, here's a surprise. Here's somewhere I can go, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not interesting. That's blindly trial and error in the dark, which is one of the tried and true and most boring gameplay types of things ever.
It would really have to have some really solid design to make it not guess and check.
Yeah, they're not going to do it. All right, we'll be back in a few minutes, guys.
Listening to Arizona's News Talk leader, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Welcome back, guys. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
My name is Rich.
How you liking those
cinnamon twists?
Cinnamon twists.
They're tasty.
Yeah, okay. That's real professional.
I'm sorry.
We run a tight ship here at Chatterbox.
It's very strict.
Alon, of course, is out on sabbatical. Let's do some little housekeeping. If you want to call in, 866-536-1100. And if you feel like going to school and paying some money, you should go to UAT. Now, we've got... What's this?
Dude, this video is awesome.
Dude, would you stop watching the videos?
Dude, I can't help it. All right, it's GDC, and everybody releases videos during events. And I'm watching the Two Human video, and it's sweet.
Okay.
And I'm not going to make the noise I did during the break.
I wish you'd do it again. So anyway.
Maybe I will.
All right. We've got a phone call. It's, what's this, a big surprise. It's Pen
15.
15 from Maryland.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, what's up, man? How's it
going?
Dude,
you're not in IRC. What's up?
I can't go onto the site at all. That's why.
That's what I thought. I thought you were lame and used the built-in Java applet. And you should just download MRC and it'd work way better.
Okay. So apparently you're not hardcore enough for Rich, but... But I'm sure you had a real reason to call, so what's going on, dude?
Well, I wanted to call about, I wanted your opinion on how sometimes I believe technology limits gameplay. And the specific game I wanted to mention, just in, because it came out recently, is Burnout Paradise.
All right. I'm immediately regretting giving the cinnamon twists to Rich. So before we were rudely interrupted by... this exasperating crunchiness. Okay, so you're saying technology limits gameplay?
Yeah, and specifically in Burnout Paradise, a lot of people are wondering why they don't have the restart option, which every racing game since the beginning of time has had.
What do you mean?
I haven't played the whole game, so what do you mean? Like, if you don't like how you did, then you want to restart?
If it's obvious that you're going to lose, that you'd like to restart.
That's not in Burnout Paradise?
Allow you to do that.
Wow, that's
they
a...
They have that option in Burnout Revenge.
Yes, but we're talking about the new game.
So yeah, I know. I don't think that's technology related. I think that
that's
either...
That's just a dumb decision.
A, what Rich said, or B, they just decide... They just... I don't know. It was an oversight. Like, we're just spending so much time making our crashes awesome... We forgot that some people might want to restart after, you know, a bad start to a race or whatever.
Well, I mean, normally it would be an easy fix, but also it's because they – I'm sure EA went to Criterion and said, we want a huge GTA world that's always streaming and that you can go anywhere at any time without any loading. And the consequence of that is that you can't have it automatically jump back to the race.
Now, this is an interesting point you bring up because – depending on and this is even more interesting because it kind of speaks to a lot of what developers deal with in terms of designers' relationships with programmers, and that is to say that, you know, depending on how the code structure was built, you may actually be right. It may in fact be very non-trivial to restart something, right?
But yeah, just the way Paradise is, now that I think about it, is different than other races, because it's like the world you're in, and to start a race, you basically go up to like a stoplight or wherever location to start race, so then it just puts you right into the race. It doesn't like reload a level and you start a race, so it doesn't like load a level and say, okay, here's the race, start, finish, but it's like you're in the world and you're saying, I want to start a race here, and it goes, okay, and then you're going to race there.
Right, but so. On the other hand, really, it's... I find that kind of hard to stomach because it's such a basic thing that is such a basic need that you'll have in a racing game that, I mean, if it was true that for the programmers to really like structure, you know, the game's data structures and all this other stuff in the code in such a way to make that hard, that's just not building the game in a smart way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also this explains why crash mode isn't gone, because it's obviously the most popular mode in the game. Why would they take it out? That just seems stupid. Well, because that would mean having to reload a part of the level, which the engine was.
Crash mode's gone?
Right.
Yeah, crash mode is
gone. See, I've only played the demo. I just assumed that was in the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. That's the only fun part about that game.
Guess you're not buying that one.
Holy cow.
That actually, I was going to save this for later, Penn and everyone else, but now that you brought it up, You ever heard of the game Dead Space?
I have.
I've heard about it, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so this game Dead Space that EA is making, there's actually like talk, like this is actually up for discussion whether this game is going to have a pause button or not.
Oh yeah, I was reading about that.
I mean I'm reading this and I'm like, are you crazy?
Yeah.
Like how is that? I mean, how many games have you made?
You have to be able to pause it. What if you're microwaving food and it beeps and you have to go get food or
it's just ridiculous.
You have to have pause.
People, I mean, I can't even believe that any developer.
How do you save a game without a pause button?
You just stand around and hope that nobody attacks you while you're saving, I guess. I mean, if it's really in real time.
There's like an actual save button, like the Y button is save.
Actually, that happened in GoldenEye.
What about GoldenEye?
In GoldenEye, when you would pause, everything was still going on around you.
Oh, because, it brings the watch up.
Shooting you in the face.
Right. I don't know. I just think that's retarded. It's just so obviously retarded.
Yeah.
So, okay. There's one topic into the trash can.
Kind of similar to that. I was reading the Alone in the Dark 5 or whatever number they're at. I don't know. It could be 4 or 3. It doesn't really matter. Five. The new one. They were saying that there's going to be an option to, like, skip portions of the game, like, completely. I was reading today. Apparently, like, they said, like, if a part gets hard or whatever and you can't get past it, you can skip parts of the game.
Yeah, how about this? Design the game right.
Like, how does that even make sense?
And then you won't want to skip it.
Like, oh, I can't figure this out, so I'm just going to go to chapter 5 and skip chapter 4 of a game. Like,
that
doesn't
that
make sense,
no sense
at all.
Either. All right, Penn, you got anything else for us?
Well, also, I wanted to say that I'm sort of sick and tired of all these game developers coming out with a sequel to a game that you love and
ruining it?
Well, not just ruin. Well, they ruin
it. Let's not put words into his mouth. Let the man speak.
Okay.
They come out and they say, guess what? We started from scratch. We did everything all over again, which essentially guarantees that it's broken.
Okay, but you realize that when you hear this, first of all, that's total lip service being paid, and they're just saying that so people get, like, excited that, oh, they're revamping everything. They're not just changing, you know, four variables.
But it always comes out broken, so my guess is they obviously changed a lot or enough to actually break the game.
Yeah, that also could be the case. I mean, a lot of times, you know, these game projects have so much, I don't know, there's just so much involved in just getting stuff to work, and they require such an enormous time commitment that when you decide to redo everything from the ground up, and I'm really talking about, like, the blockbusters, like, when you decide to do that, it's like, yeah, you need even more than, I mean, it took you a whole game development cycle to get you to the point where you're at.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, for example, Rockstar and Insomniac is on a yearly cycle with their games,
mm-hmm.
and Rockstar is on a 2-year cycle with all their games without fail, with the exception of the new GTA, because that's a whole new engine, so it kind of makes sense.
Well, they've had the engine since Table Tennis, but yeah.
Yeah, so
since Table Tennis.
I prefer a game not be visually spectacular, but I'd rather have it on a more consistent basis. I mm-hmm. like the fact that I could play a new Ratchet & Clank every year.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just as fun, and it was nothing but creativity because they're not spending time rebuilding an engine, rebuilding everything from scratch.
For sure. Insomniac did a really good job with the Ratchet & Clank. I love those games, and it's the same engine, and they just did a new one every year.
And it was better every year.
Yeah, it was better every year. I think every iteration just had something more that made it better.
Yeah, that's pretty much where the smart money is in terms of, like, game development goes, right? I mean, developers have even said it. I think, like, Koji Igarashi, who's a producer of the Castlevania series, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, Nanobreaker, right? Deliberately based off of the newer Castlevania engine,
mm-hmm.
right? Once you have an engine, to make several games after that based on that engine is much, much cheaper.
And that happens most of the time. I mean, most developers either use the engine they built previously or they use some other engine like Unreal or whatever.
Right. One thing I want to point out to all you guys is that, you know, you mentioned that, like, in some interview or whatever, they said, oh, we're revamping everything, right? And this kind of speak, like, you'll hear a lot of times in, like, interviews and stuff like that. And a lot of times it's producers or sometimes even designers. They'll just tell you things that
to make it sound cool.
Just to sound cool. They'll say, like, oh, our AI does all this stuff. And guess what, guys? It's not doing all that stuff. You just look at it and you buy that it does.
Yeah.
And there's so much of that going on, you know? So, I mean, take what you hear in terms of like interviews and stuff, take it with a grain of salt.
Take it. Did with, you guys like, revamp everything for Cars 2?
Take it with like two boatfuls of salt. No, we didn't. All right, we'll be back, guys.
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's number one. Woohoo!
Welcome back, guys. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
And my name is Alon.
Your name's definitely not Alon.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Actually, it's Rich imitating Alon.
If you'd like to call in,
you can call us at 866-536-1100. If you'd like to go to school, you can go to UAT. Fantastic school, right, Rich?
Yep.
Fantastic. All right. We've got a call from guess who?
I don't know.
Yo!
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, you're coming through loud and noisy.
Yes.
Loud and noisy. That's because I'm on the streets of San Francisco, biatch. How's it going over there?
It's going swimmingly well.
Indeed.
Don't
outside the Sony Online Entertainment Party for like gamers in real life, which is an acronym for girl, or at least the acronym is girl.
Because there's no real girls there.
There's all these chicks in there like talking about wanting to develop games for women, yet they're creating a game called The Agency for Sony Online Entertainment, which is a bunch of chicks in like, you know, hot girl fighter clothing.
The Agency, huh?
Yeah, I know what that game is.
They started the whole thing off with like, well, EverQuest, we can't really change what they're wearing in EverQuest. You know, we don't have that kind of pull. And then I look at the game they're showing off, and it's a bunch of chicks like dressed up in tight leather and almost nothing.
Yep.
It was crazy. But well, they are giving away good hors d'oeuvres and T-shirts, so I guess that's good enough, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess all is well in the game development and promotion universe.
Yeah, well, earlier today, I had all these appointments, including one appointment with people who, like, it was supposed to be tomorrow, and they called me up today thinking it was today, and whatever.
So you punched them in the face, and you gave them a few words?
Sweet.
You know, I took a look. It's a mobile game called Ego, actually, which is weird, because it's, like, it's all about having you create an avatar, and then you meet people on your cell phone, but you can also play on Facebook, because I don't know if you realize Facebook has, like, recently released an API.
If it's a cell phone game, it's worthless.
But I told him, I said, you know, if I'm meeting all these people online, it's not very useful. Like, I'm kind of an adult, and it's loud out here. Unless the end result is that I end up, like, having sex with one of the people I meet.
Right, totally not worth
it. Through this game, then why would I waste my time? But I guess kids would like it, teenagers. But the guy totally understood. He's like, well, no, look, you can filter by region.
He's like, no, look, you can have cyber sex.
Yeah. No, so apparently they have that concept in mind. The function has been built in. And so I can appreciate it on that level.
That's funny. Anyway,
I've already seen a bunch of stuff. We had a lot of appointments today already.
All right, so what's the big news?
To make big time tomorrow.
Any big news?
I think tomorrow is the big day.
Little news?
Well, I actually got to see a few good games today, but there's some stupid press embargo on it. I had to sign an NDA, so I can't talk about it until next week's show.
So what was it?
Yeah. We can talk about it next week.
Nothing? All right.
No. But I've seen the guys from Destructoid down here, Ron, and the whole Destructoid crew.
Say hi to them for us. I'm sure they won't remember me.
Maybe not. I met some girl named Romy or Ronnie that you're friends with, Ara.
Yeah, maybe. I know Ronnie. Right on.
I think that was the girl that we met at the last show that we were at.
No.
No? Okay.
But
well,
no.
She
time.
Said
okay.
Hi to me. It's like, oh, I'm a good friend of Ara's. I said, okay, that's cool.
Nice.
So you guys holding down the fort all right over there?
Apparently.
You know what, Alon? Take as much time as you want. Don't rush getting back here. You know, take a couple weeks off. It's all taken care of.
What was that? Okay, what is that sound?
Apparently Alon got hit by a bus.
No, I'm here. There's just buses passing by.
Oh,
okay. I'd be disrupting the girl gaming event.
You almost got hit by a bus.
I understand the audio that I'm creating is hideous and not good radio. So you guys have a great night.
It's fantastic.
Call in and say hi.
Right in. Thanks for checking with us. And, it's good times.
All right. You guys have a great night.
All right. Enjoy.
Peace.
Bye.
Okay. So there you have it. That was Alon. And
sounds amazing.
Now, we only have a few minutes left in this segment, but I'm probably going to need all of this one and the next one.
What are we talking about?
We're doing a this is my magnum opus of radio right here. Okay, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay. So I have to start this out with a little preamble, a little story, right? As you might know, Rich, you know, I like to rent games before I play them, before I buy them, right? And so I rented Enthusia, right?
What's that?
Enthusia is like this old game that came out around like 1997 or whatever. It's like a racing game. It's basically like a Gran Turismo copy.
Okay.
Right?
I think I know what you're talking about.
So, you know, I've got like this log of games, like games I always wanted to play but never bothered to. Uh-huh. So like that's one of them, right? So Enthusia, I get the game and I start playing and I'm like, wow, you know what? Like this is kind of interesting. You know, I could see myself getting into this, you know? The handling of the vehicles was like really kind of...
So you gave it more than 30 seconds?
No. The 30 seconds I gave it...
Okay. I just had to clarify.
Earned a minute.
It was a 30 seconds and then he got rid of it.
And it's like picking up a girl. And then the minute that I played earned it the next 5 minutes.
Okay.
All right? So basically, I was like, okay, you know what? Like this looks cool enough that like I'm going to spend some time with this, right? So I sent it back, you know, because I rent through the mail service.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought a copy... for 1 cent off eBay, so okay. That was like good times. And then
$7 shipping and handling.
Right. But still, come on, pretty good. And so I'm playing this game, right? And now initially, you know, there was like, okay, you know what, the cars handle, like it's kind of twitchy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I saw that
what
there's
what platform
some
is this on?
It's a PS2 game.
PS2?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for asking these questions.
I needed to make sure here.
No, this is good. You're like the, okay.
I'm making sure you don't miss details that are very important.
That's good. That's what you're here for.
Continue.
That's your job. All right. So so I'm playing this game, and, you know, eventually I got to the point where I noticed that after about, like, 7 or 8 hours of gameplay, mm-hmm. right, that I just totally – I'm like, this game is crap. I'm not playing this anymore. I just –
So this is after you bought it.
I could throw it in the trash, okay? And I noticed – and this has happened before, but really, like, since it came up so recently and because I – invested so much time so heavily in the beginning, right, mm-hmm. that, you know, my impression of what the game was like in the beginning was very different from what it would end up like ultimately.
Yeah.
Right? And so something that I've been kind of like has been brewing in my head for many, many years, like it finally like coalesced.
Your reviewing technique isn't good?
And no, it's not a reviewing technique at all.
It's that what?
One of the things was uh-huh. that I noticed that, well... The thing about the game that made it so ridiculous and made me want to give up playing was never, ever commented on in any game review I read about it.
Okay.
Okay? And to be a little precise about it, it was this, right? This game has a really weird, like, experience point system, like a scoring system, where, like, every race you play...
Experience?
Yeah. Just listen. Every race you play, you'll get, like, a certain number of points, depending on, like...
Is it, like...
If
kudos?
You place first, no. Just
or
listen.
Not.
Just
okay,
listen,
I'll just
right?
listen here.
Like, if you get first, you get 100 points. If you get second, you get 80, whatever.
Okay.
Right? But here's the thing, right? Every car you get, whether you can go advance in through the game, like advance the next class or whatever, mm-hmm. right? You have to have a certain ranking, right? And so the only way you can increase your ranking is to get as many first places as possible.
Yep.
Okay, here's the thing.
That
the
makes
points
sense.
That you get out of your... out of your race ranking are scaled by the performance of the vehicle.
What?
Right? So that the better your vehicle gets, you actually get less points. Okay? So not only that, but your ranking is based on a 13-session history. I don't know what designer thought of this.
What?
This is insane. You're basically, all the points you got in the past 13 sessions are added up, right?
Uh-huh.
If you have to change a car, you miss a week. You miss a session. So that counts as zero.
Okay.
Right? And if you change cars and go to another one, right, the longer you play with the same car, the better
it
gets.
Does it reset every car for each car?
If you get
the
to
points?
If you go to a new car.
If you get a new car, you start back over.
Only a new car. Anyway, the point is, right, that this game, like, heavily, heavily penalizes you for changing cars, right?
Mm-hmm.
It heavily penalizes you for not just changing between cars, but, like, oh, I've played this one for 2 hours. Let me try a faster car. And it heavily penalizes you for trying out faster cars, right? So, like, here's the thing, right? In the first 5, 10, 20 minutes of playing the game,
That's not apparent.
None of this is apparent at all. You have no idea of what's in store. Okay, you play the game for a long term, and all this garbage comes up. That, like, why did they do this? And you'll find out why when we come back. Welcome back once again. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name is Ara.
And my name is Rich.
And Alon's...
is gone.
Alon's somewhere in some kind of...
getting hit by a bus.
CD bar in San Francisco.
Girl.
Getting hit by girls and buses. All right.
Yeah. Anyways.
All right. We haven't got much time left, so hopefully we can squeeze this all in. If you want to call in, it's 866-536-1100. And,
we have one?
We have one.
Do we have a caller?
We have a call. If you can hold on, caller, just a little bit.
Uh-oh.
Let me finish my spiel here, all right, since I don't miss my momentum. Did we mention UAT?
We did that the last two sections we did.
Okay,
so awesome. Now we did it again.
No. So it's good. So, you know, I just like that school so much that mm-hmm. I can't stop mentioning it. Okay,
yep.
Anyway, getting back to what we were talking about before.
Enthusia.
Here's the reason why game reviews are always wrong. Essentially, is that game reviewers necessarily have to evaluate games on a basis that completely ignores the long-term experience, which ironically is what people who actually read reviews are the most interested in. And by game reviewers, I don't mean like every game reviewer. I mean like really like the game reviewers of like the top magazines, like the ones that actually get paid a salary and don't have time to spend like 10, 20 hours. But here's the thing that I noticed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, a lot of games have two kinds of levels that you can look at them with, right? You can evaluate them on a superficial basis and on a long-term basis. And if you really think about it, these two qualities are relatively disjoint. And it seems to me like it's, you know, it's a difference of how much time you spend with the game, right? To me, it feels like around like 3 or 4 hours is where like this transition happens between like the long-term experience and the superficial experience, right? So to get more specific, what am I talking about? The superficial experience is like, you know, when you go over to your friend's house and you play a game for like, you know, an hour and you don't play it again,
yep.
right? Or, you know, if you, you know, game reviewers, that's what they do. What are the things that you notice, right? Superficial, like graphics, animation, sound, even mechanics, you know, are superficial in these terms, right? Because, you know, you notice something about the gameplay mechanics when you first play a game, right? But there's all this stuff that happens after you've invested like, what, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours into a game that you never, ever have a hint of that can change the game's nature 100%, you know, can turn it around 180 degrees on you, right? And it's things like, you know, how do you feel about, you know, your progress and your performance in the game over time, right?
Sorry, I wasn't listening.
That influences...
I have to admit.
That influences a lot of, you know, what you're talking... Yeah.
I was just going to say
okay.
Quick.
Another thing is, you know,
Ara.
How you're feeling about how the story evolves, right? That's a long-term thing that doesn't come to play. You know, how do your feelings on, like, what nuances of the mechanics get revealed to you? You know, how do the game systems scale over time?
Uh-huh.
Okay? So, we've got a caller. What's your name, caller?
It's Zeppi.
Zeppi, all right. How's it going, Zeppi?
Pretty good.
Were you going to comment on this issue, or did you have something unrelated?
Sure, I'll comment on that.
Right on. Okay, go ahead.
Well, what I'm thinking is, sure, the reviews I have don't take into account the long term, but is it really a better system than that? Like, people want to get the reviews as soon as possible. And so these companies have to get these reviews out and without taking into account the long term. So I think it's more like taking into account, like, look at these reviews, but you also don't like completely pay attention to them.
Right.
Like, you also look at, say, what your friends are saying, what people like you trust on the internet are saying.
Well, of course. I mean, if you're smart, you're going to trust, you know, what your friends say about the game more than like, you know, what some joker in some magazine says. But I really just think it comes down to what you care about, right? I mean, some people, are more interested in the superficial aspects. You know, I only use the term superficial to relate to, you know, whether it's a surface feature or not. It's not to, like, denigrate or say that, like, superficial aspects don't necessarily matter.
I just want to...
They do matter for a lot of people.
I just want to point out quick, Penn wants me to let you know, the GameSpot review of Enthusia actually references your big problem with the game in quite detail. Quite a bit of detail.
Thanks.
So your whole spiel on reviews
all
don't
right.
have
well,
this complaint.
No, but you know what? I read it.
I think it's still valid. This
I read
your
it,
argument.
And they did not
but,
they did not say why. They just said that it penalizes you to for changing cars.
Yeah, it says it penalizes you. It gives the whole the 9 to 12 weeks, whatever, change your car.
Okay.
It encourages you to
well, you know what?
Use
kudos,
weaker
kudos
cars.
To GameSpot.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, no. You know what? I actually didn't.
But all right. It's fine and good, like, saying that reviews are bad, but do you have any, like, ideas on how you should change the review system to be, like, better reflect the games in the long term, or do you have any ideas in that way?
Well, I think that, like, a lot of people who review games who do it, you know, just because, like, they do it not as professionals, but because they just do it because they like doing it. I think that if you're interested in the long-term experience, like, those types of reviews are better trusted. So reading, like, blogs and stuff where the guy can just expound for 20,000 words if he really feels like it on a game, right? You know, I don't say it's, like, necessarily, like, making a review
who's
better
gonna or worse. Who's going to read 20,000 words if they're deciding to buy a game or not?
Nobody, but I'm just saying it's there.
Okay.
It's there if you want it, right? They have that luxury. Professional writers don't have that luxury. Right.
I think these like reviewers should like return to these games like later on and maybe like give afterthoughts after playing it longer than their initial review.
I think that would be totally sweet. You know, like car magazines, for example, they have like reviews on a car and like, oh, we got this car and we're reviewing it. And they also have a totally different type of review. They have long term reviews, right? Mm-hmm. Where they say what happens to a car over time. They're like, oh, you know what? Like we drove this car for 20,000 miles and like we had to do these repairs on it, and this is how the car changed over time. That would be really interesting, right? Now, on
only
the other hand...
The problem with that is, like, the cost.
Well, yeah, no one would ever
you
do
can't
it.
Do that for every game.
You can't
but
can't
magazines
do
and stuff do that.
In a professional publication, you don't have any really good reason for doing that.
Yeah.
And that's why I say, like, you know, if you want to look for that sort of thing, I mean, that's what I'm interested in as a gamer, right? I think that most gamers who would classify themselves as, like, hardcore, I mean, I hate that terminology.
Hardcore.
Right? But, like, if you really care about the long-term experience of the game, I think that most reviews won't get you what you're looking for. I think that you just look toward enthusiast type of things or just, like, search around on the web or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. Although, in the end, I think reviews do give a good guide, like, a lot of the time, what games you shouldn't ignore, though.
Yeah,
like,
I mean...
Maybe in a general sense.
Obviously, there are games that you should just avoid in general or...
Like most games?
Yeah, a lot of games. But I mean, a lot of times you're not just going to use one source. If you're really debating like if you should buy a game or not, like you need to read more than one review. But other than that, like if you're going to buy a game, no matter what a review says, then it doesn't really matter at all. So.
All right. Well,
the audience for Barbie's Horse Adventure, you're still going to buy it.
Yeah, they could get a 10 out of 10, and I'd still never buy it.
Okay, let's use the 1.5 minutes that we have left. Fruitfully. So thanks very much for your call. And there he goes. All right.
All right.
There's the music.
Yes.
So I will say that one thing that I think is cool is that EGM is switching to a grade format for the reviews.
Oh, like
they're
gonna letters?
A, B, C, D, and I don't know if they're going to give it an E, but they're going to have F, right? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, numbers make no sense.
Well,
but
letters...
This is a little better because
not
now you
really.
Can say no because you can say C and like everyone knows that's average, whereas like a 5
well,
is like you know in the dumpster for some outlets and like totally average for other ones.
Yeah,
so I think
but
that's
I mean,
pretty cool.
It just depends on the outlet. Like so now EGM is just doing letters instead of out of 10.
Yeah,
it doesn't change anything. It's just a more readily understandable to some people, but
yep.
People that subscribe to EGM get it every single month. So they probably understand the numbering system.
Really, the better thing
is all I'm saying.
Read the words, not
yeah.
the numbers. All right, guys. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember...
All your base are belong to us.